It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here on yet another beautiful Saturday. It's summer, so it's warm, but it is absolutely gorgeous. Again and again and again. It just makes you happy to live here. And if you don't, you should. If you do, good for you. But don't come.
Yeah, we don't need any more people right now. The traffic is getting...
What I meant to say was, you should have thought of that earlier.
Yeah. That's a much better way of putting it.
I like it. Well, here we are. It's been a week since we were here. And strangely, in that week, absolutely nothing happened.
I don't know what you were doing.
I was hibernating.
Mm-hmm. It was a wild week.
It was crazy. And I'm not just talking about the stock market, although there's probably some inner reaction there, but wow.
It was crazy.
Yeah, presidential assassination attempts and on and on and on. So where does it all lead? We'll talk about that today.
We'll see. Not much reaction in the market, though,
to that
on Monday. It was pretty flat on Monday.
Amazingly. First off, everybody, all the regulars, welcome back. We're depend on you, of course, to know that there's always people out there listening, having questions, telling other people. If you're new to the show, just keep listening for the hour. We promise you'll learn something. And I remind everybody that we do this live for a simple reason, and that is so that you can call in and talk about whatever financial topic or whatever comment you have on pretty much anything in the landscape, and we can answer it on air. If you are timid, and I know some of you are, you can also reach us by either calling in, have Tom say, please call back to this number or whatever, or you can email us at info@vanweefinancial.com, and we should get the email in time to talk about it. So, you know, don't be afraid of us. We don't bite, and don't be afraid that your questions are stupid, because I tell people this all the time. If you don't know the answer to something, there's a lot of people out there that don't know the answer to something. And the corollary to that, which is there are no stupid questions. Your job as listeners is to make us, the hosts, look good.
Yep. And if we don't know it, it does happen.
It does.
We'll just make something. No, I'm just kidding. We'll go and look it up and get back to you the next week.
Yeah, and we're serious about that. There are things that we don't know, of course, just like there are things that everywhere that people don't know. But there's nothing we're afraid to talk about at all, and you shouldn't be either. So we're actually quite nice in person.
Most of the time,
yeah. Just unless you're really stupid.
I don't know about that.
And sure, he comes back for a week, and he decides to be a one-man peanut gallery. What can you say? All right, well, it did not turn out to be a good week, even though Monday started pretty well, but there was a little anomaly in it too.
Yeah, I did a bit of a double take this morning when I was prepping and said, oh, the Dow was actually up this week. That doesn't seem right.
It's been kicked around, beaten, and thrown against the wall.
Yeah, it actually got up over 41,000 on Wednesday, and then it came back down at the end of the week along with the rest of the market to end at 40,287. That represented a 0.7% gain for the week. So that was, I really had to go and double check those numbers.
Well, I had caught a clip of that on the television news last night, right before, I can't remember what came on, but I glanced up there and I saw that same number, and I got my surprise out of the way.
Okay.
Or it would have been this morning when I got up.
Really nothing about the week felt very positive.
No.
In the market.
Right.
It was just kind of a hangover feel to it. You just kind of knew when you opened the futures in the morning that it was going to be down.
And I kept thinking some afternoon around 3 o'clock, you're going to see a big buying thing go on, and it just didn't happen.
Yep. The NASDAQ, definitely wasn't up this week. It was down 3.6%. The S&P was down 2%. So it could have been a lot worse, but the Dow kind of saved the day. But there was some other parts of the market that did reasonably well this week too. So it wasn't just the Dow. Some of that money flowing out of the NASDAQ, I think, moved into the small cap space.
It has to be.
Yeah. That index was up 1.7% this week, and it's up 8% in the last month. In fact, so much money flowed into the small cap space that the index recorded the most overbought level of any index ever on Tuesday. The Russell 2000 closed 4.42 standard deviations above its 50-day moving average. That is the high, even the NASDAQ at the peak of the dot-com bubble never got that overbought.
No.
That's crazy. It did drop a little bit later in the week, pretty much what you would suspect would happen when the market came back down to earth. But you may wonder if that's a sign that the market's going to turn down when things get that overextended.
Well, just for everybody's edification, once you get more than two standard deviations above the 50-day moving average, we consider it overbought, and it'll probably either pause or pull back a little. 4.4 is unbelievable.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
In the past, when this has happened on either the Russell or any other index, it does lead to a short-term pullback, but it has also led to gains in the medium and long term. So I would watch out for the short term, but you might see a really good buying opportunity here based on historical results.
I agree.
Interestingly, from a technical perspective, although the NASDAQ was down 3.6 and the S&P was down 2, no damage was done this week, technically, if you're looking at the charts. The NASDAQ and the S&P are still firmly in uptrends, and the Dow and the Russell actually broke out to the upside this week. So while it felt like a terrible week, was it? I don't think it was. No. Just
although
some shuffling, really.
The 3 months that start on the 15th of July are notoriously the worst 3 months in the market.
Hmm.
And it generally will be down about 2.5% in that 3 month period. Well, we're off to a good start there in that we've got a head start on it. But when you think about it, look year to date. And we're up, the S&P is up year to date. I've got 15%. Now, if this pulls back 2.5%, and then accelerates into the year end, which is the typical pattern, it's going to be a bang up year.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's nothing at all that I'm afraid of personally, looking out over the landscape, just because we're in that week.
Yeah, nor am I. And typically, I always joke that in August there'll be a day where it looks like all the traders got back from the Hamptons and suddenly volatility just goes crazy.
Yep.
As people return to work. I can't prove that that's what's happened, but it sure looks like it. If you go back and look at some of the recent Augusts, you'll see a day where it really spikes.
Yeah. August is the dog days, and the melees, and all those things. And generally speaking, you won't see real big shifts in anything. You won't see real big volumes in anything. It's there, but it's not exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those months you got to put up with to get to the final quarter, which is usually where you make your money.
The Santa Claus rally.
Yep. We'll see this year. You never know. Everything's a little strange. All right, lots more to come, including a trivia question. Take a quick break and be right back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanwee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanwee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanwee.
And I'm Adam Vanwee.
And we will have a trivia question, as usual, after a couple of more personal things. This week, I don't know how you describe this guy, but an icon of comedy, Bob Newhart, passed. I cannot remember a time when I didn't watch him on TV. Funny, funny, funny man. And I miss him. I was also very fond of Lou Dobbs, and he passed.
Lou Dobbs and Richard Simmons recently passed.
It's been a bad summer for people that we really like. My sister would have been 75 today.
Wow.
Yeah. Unfortunately, she didn't even make 65.
No.
Very sad. Anyway, without Newhart, you got to laugh less, I guess. He was, for anybody who doesn't know any more than that, he was the dad in the movie Elf. And
that was a TV show, wasn't it?
No, it was a movie, actually. No, that's Elf. ELF.
Elf.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
The Elf.
That's right. With
Yeah, what's his name?
Yeah, Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one. That was him, among other things. Anyway, a couple other little things. I've been doing a lot on what I've been calling unserious government. There's so many things going on, and of course it was probably never more highlighted than with what happened on Saturday night. But there are other things too, and I want to congratulate the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, who blocked the rest of Biden's illegal, unconstitutional college loan forgiveness plan. You go, guys. That was a good move. I'm tired of people spending my money. And the trivia question is directly related to that. Everybody probably knows about the so-called pier off the coast of Gaza, which was meant to create a supply line to Gaza because of the conflict inland. Well, it didn't work out, shall we say, and has been dismantled. I want to know, what was the cost of that pier for every day it operated? And that, by cost, I mean to you and to me and to every other taxpayer. And I'll give you one quick hint. It was in the millions every day. And I won't give you any more hints than that. So, all right. Trivia question today, exactly what I wanted to get into with stupidity and how we're being fleeced. And I'm not going to start right away on it. There might be just a few more things to wrap up. But then I also have one that sounds like a dumb government or a scam thing, but it's actually very important to people who are of a certain age. And I'll get to that as soon as I ask Adam. You got anything else you want to bring up?
No, I've just been thinking a lot about that student loan plan lately. And equally arbitrary, why don't we pay off some small business loans?
Now you're talking.
Why don't we pay off some tree trimming equipment for people that start a tree trimming business? I mean, it's just so arbitrary to pick winners and losers and pay off their debt. Why not do it for people who are employing others? I don't know. It's just an idea.
Yeah, well, related to that a little bit, I found an interesting story today. Your clients cannot claim a $32,000 self-employment tax credit. Now, I have not read this, but apparently social media is inundated with this rumor that if you're self-employed during COVID as part of the employee retention credit, you are able to take a credit of $32,000 for your self-employment.
It
is a 100% scam. Do not do it, or you will get in trouble. And please don't believe me on this. Call your tax professional.
Mm-hmm.
Do not claim it without or with consulting your tax professional, because that kind of thing can get you in a heap of trouble, and it's just a stupid rumor. But the one I really wanted to talk about, this one sounds like something people are doing bad. You get a notice in your mailbox, and I have gotten it at least three times. It says, important changes to access your Social Security account. Now, does that set up, does that present itself like a scam or what?
Yeah.
It sounds like one of those typical things. I had a cute story about those typical things, too, that I might get to. But in this case, this one is true. If you have established your Social Security online account prior to September 18th, 2021, and have not changed the way you log in, you have to.
Oh, well, yeah, but you don't. The next time you go and log in, it's going to make you do it anyway.
It's going to make you do it, exactly. But don't be surprised, and don't think that you're being scammed, somebody's interfering. You need one of two ways to get in. You can get a login.gov ID or an ID.me ID, and each one will link you to Social Security. It's not a scam. It's not difficult. I've done it. Actually, quite a while ago.
Yeah, I did too. It's very easy.
Yeah. So, first off, if you don't have an online Social Security account, get one.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want it.
You're going to need it.
You're going to want it. You're going to need it. Exactly right. So, it's in case you don't know the term, you get an authenticator app, and there are several of them. There's some from Google. It's just something you get on your phone or on your computer. And it produces a number for your multi-level ID, and it'll get in. You will be protected better. You'll be a lot happier, and you'll actually get into your account. Once you get there, if you haven't been there in a while, or if you're new to it, always check your earnings history when you log in. They do occasionally miss something, and your payments when you file are based on the top 30, I think it is, years of earnings. And if one of them didn't get recorded and it was fairly recent, it's probably bigger than the one that's 29 back from you, and it will update if you can get it updated. So do yourself a favor and get up to date and stay up to date with Social Security, because this is one of those things that's going to treat you well forever. You're forever anyway.
Definitely. I did want to go back to the market a bit.
Okay.
Outside, it wasn't just the U.S. that got hit this week. The international markets were down, yeah, maybe even more than the U.S. It was pretty ugly out there. The All World Index dropped almost 3%, and emerging markets got hit even harder, down almost 4%. But for once, the culprit wasn't China. That was one of the few markets that had gains, yeah, this week, which was surprising. It was up 1.7%. Mexico lost over 5%. Brazil was down almost 4%. And Germany dropped over 3%, so pretty brutal overseas as well. Outside of China, there really wasn't much good news. Inside the S&P, energy had the best week. It was up more than 2%, which is odd because oil prices fell.
Odd.
And technology got hit the hardest. It was down more than 5.5%. Ouch.
Yeah.
Real estate and financials both gained more than 1%, while utilities, communication services, and consumer discretionary were all down more than 1%. So a lot of disparity inside the index this week.
Seems to be some sector rotation going on.
Yeah, definitely. I called it the reversal trade. But pretty much it's a reversal from the first half of this year. And that's been prevalent in July for the most part. The S&P equal weight outperformed the index by almost 2%. So that's a reversal. Value outperformed growth again. That's a reversal. Mm-hmm. The S&P value index was up 0.7%, while the S&P growth index was down 3.8%. So pretty big spread there as well.
But there's one thing that never seems to change.
Natural gas,
yeah, you got it,
was down big. I was just going to commodities, and it was ugly in commodities. The index was off 3%. Gold, silver, oil, agriculture, and natural gas all lost value this week, but natural gas lost the most. It was really brutal. Fixed income didn't really save you this week either. The bond market was down 35 basis points. Slightly higher interest rates drove that. The expectation for rates to fall is still in place, but it didn't happen this week. So it's kind of brutal out there, to be honest.
What's the Fed going to do now?
I don't know. I don't know. I think that the potential is there to either cut or hold in September, and I really don't know. I don't know.
Last number I saw, the market was pricing in a 93% chance of a cut in September.
Right.
And I have changed my opinion. I am now leaning much more toward yes, they will.
I still think they will, but I could see a hold too. I'm not sure.
There are a couple things going on. If you look at the chart for unemployment claims, it's getting now, you can take a month or two here and there and you're going to see upticks. But it seems to be in a pattern now that they're rising, and not just a little bit. That said, they're still below the danger point. So it's certainly not absolute. But it's looking a lot like this pattern will continue. And the other thing is that the semiconductors have shown some weakness now for the first time in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's to the point now where they have broken out of their pattern. And as they say, as go the semis, so goes the market.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily true. But I am looking for what the Fed is looking for, which is reasons or excuses to actually do the cut. And I think they're in pretty good shape to find those now. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Of course, we'll all find out in September, which, strangely enough, isn't all that far away anymore, it seems. So, what can you say? There's an earnings season going on. The tip of the iceberg reported, there are only 88 companies, but 72% revenue beats and 78% earnings beats. It's a good start.
Yep.
We'll see. Everything that happens, every week we come in here, the same thing goes on. And that thing is, we got as many reasons to be positive as negative.
Mm-hmm.
Just can't quite put our fingers on what it is that is going to happen.
I don't even want to guess.
I don't either. All right, well, I'll remind everybody, lines are open, 904-222-8255. And we will be taking one more quick break and we'll come back with a whole bunch more. And I did want to just make one quick comment that Elon Musk is moving both X and SpaceX from California to Texas.
Yep.
And if you're in need of a job or if you're a home builder, carpenter, anything else, and you're out of work, go to Texas. He's building whole towns right outside of Austin. It's going to be a very interesting thing. All right, much more to come. We got to pay some bills. Be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And lines are open, 904-222-8255. Give us a call. You can try to answer a trivia question. You can talk about anything that's on your mind. And there's probably a lot of things on a lot of people's mind these days, for sure. What was the daily cost of the few days of use we got out of the pier in Gaza? Taxpayer money being misappropriated yet again. All right, let's talk about soccer.
Yeah, so if you're a soccer fan like I am, a couple of big tournaments just wrapped up. We had the Euro and then the Copa, the U.S., or not the U.S., the America's version of the Euro. But in the Euro, there was a young man who really stood out, played for Spain, stood out, his play stood out, but also because of his age. At the time of his first goal during the Euro, he was 16 years old.
Whoa.
And because they made the final, he actually turned 17 right before the final. He's got braces. I mean, the kid is a phenom. Just like unbelievably good. The previous high ever paid to for a player to be released from their current club was Neymar. He was released from a Barcelona contract for $262 million.
How long did he think about it?
Well, that was just what they paid the club to let him renegotiate a new contract with a new club. That was Paris Saint-Germain. So that you have to buy out a player from their current club to be able to sign them to your club. For this young man, Lamine Yamal, his current buyout is set at $1.08 billion. It's unlikely that anyone will pay that because I don't think you could recoup that. What if he gets injured? But that is how highly the Barcelona club feels about this young star.
Well, for those of us who are a little older and grew up in this country where it was kind of a non-existent thing, that's unfathomable.
Yeah. Yeah, but what an amazing price tag. I mean, to be that good at that age, though, you have to think he's got a huge career ahead of him.
Of course, I think his Japanese baseball player is showing numbers that are just beyond my comprehension, too.
Yep, the numbers get quite large when the dollars coming in because of these people. I mean, look what's happening to the WNBA now. It hasn't gone to their salaries because they're still not profitable yet. Right. But viewership is way up because of Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, and look how they treat her.
I mean,
that might be partly show.
Yeah, I mean, come on, that's great.
But
for
you know
the
what
brand.
They did? You know what they did get? All of them. They got private airplanes now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, okay. that was part of Caitlin coming in and the demand going high enough that they all now, they've moved off of commercial and they're flying private planes. So every one of them secretly, when they see her in the hallway, I ought to just thank her for that, I would think. She is something else, you got to admit it. Is she one of the top 10 players and did she deserve a shot on the Olympics? To me, those are two different questions.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe she's not one of the top 10 or 12 or whatever yet. She probably will be one day. Should she have gone? Well, if you're promoting the Olympics, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. It's
just my opinion, and I know you could argue that, well, then that person in the last place wouldn't have gotten her chance, and yeah, I know all that. But I'm just talking about for the good of the sport. If they want this to carry on into subsequent seasons, then they ought to be promoting the game every chance they get.
Yeah, it also depends. Do you want to promote views for that sport? I mean, without her, I bet you the numbers on basketball are way down, and more people choose to watch, I don't know, gymnastics or whatever else.
That would be my expectation, I guess. All right. The IRS made some decisions this week, and it doesn't affect very many people, but it affects even a handful of our clients. A lot of people know that starting with Secure and then going into Secure 2.0, there have been a lot of changes in the rules for inherited accounts. And there was an interpretation a few years ago that we've talked about more than once, and we didn't like it. And that said, I'm going to cut back and go to the phone, and I'll pick this up in a minute. Good morning, Leroy.
Hi, how are you folks doing today?
Excellent. You?
Good. Could you repeat the trivia question, please?
I sure can. What was the cost every day, average cost per day of the pier in Gaza for days of operation?
Okay. About $11,500,000.
Now, where would anybody come up with a number that high for a pier in Gaza? Could it be by looking at the numbers?
Well, it's supposedly 20 days operational.
Yeah, that's it.
Is that all it got? I didn't realize it was
20
that
days.
Short.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a bunch of bucks. Especially the thing is you can't even, you probably never use it again.
No, well, they dismantled it. That was not how you build something on a body of water that size.
You put it out on the ocean. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, it's meant to be in a protected bay or a cove or a
we wouldn't.
Kind of like being out there on a paddle boat.
Yeah, exactly.
When we lived on Lake Michigan, we didn't put a floating dock there. You know how long life expectancy of that thing was?
Virtually
nothing. It's crazy. It's just time after time after time. That's what bugs me. They throw our money around like it's limitless. And then they complain that they have to pay for things. They haven't paid for things by $1 trillion every 100 days.
Yeah, I heard when this thing started, it was like $390 million.
Yeah,
and now it's down to 230. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, that's Washington math, I guess.
A reappropriation, probably. You know, accounting tricks, in other words. Just to make it look good? Well, they failed. It didn't look good. That didn't work. It's truly amazing. And I'm getting so tired of it. They complain on one hand, and then they lie on the other hand. Now, Kamala's saying there's a manufacturing factory job boom. The truth of the matter is that under Trump, the average was 19,000 workers a month in factories.
Oh, yeah.
And theirs is 4,000. And it took them forever to get back what was lost in COVID. I don't want to hear this stuff and know that we're paying for it when they don't even understand that they're causing this problem. My grandchildren are going to be in debt at a level that I absolutely cannot fathom, and I don't like it.
I don't know. It's just like, you know, when they had the debate on, and they were talking about the military, and Biden was bragging about it.
Yeah.
I wish Trump would have brought up, hey, they met all their quotas when I was in office. What happened to yours?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they're saving money by having less personnel.
Yeah, that's true.
What can you say?
All right, I'll let you folks
know. Leroy, thank you. We appreciate it. We've got your address, so we'll take care of you.
All right.
Thank
you. Have a good day. Bye.
It's amazing, isn't it? $11.5 million away on a stupid idea that everybody said the day it was announced that it was a stupid idea.
Yeah.
Can't possibly work. All right. Back to inherited IRAs. The rules for inheriting IRAs used to be that almost anybody could make what they called a stretch IRA. So when you inherited the funds, you got to establish a new account that was labeled as an inherited IRA. You could never add to it. It's a standalone thing. But the neat part was you could stretch it. In other words, you could take your required minimum distributions over your life expectancy, and generally speaking, you inherit from people older than you are. So for many people, it was a real godsend. But then again, there were other occasions where you had to take it out in 5 years, and they moved that out to 10 years, and that was fine. That we talked a lot about how they made that trade, the things we got for it, the things we lost in it, and Adam and I concluded that it was a net okay.
Yeah, I mean, I wish it could still stretch, but
yeah,
of all the things, it probably affected the least amount of people, because in order to do that, you probably are already fairly wealthy and
right.
don't need the money, and that's why you wanted to stretch right. it.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
That we can live with it because it was pretty balanced. Well, then some idiot judge came up with a concept that wasn't written into the law. It said, well, if the deceased was at or above the deceased required beginning date, you had 10 years to get it out, but you had to take an RMD every year.
So annoying.
And it was just, it was an opinion out of thin air.
Yep.
And it was so confusing. This applied to people who died in 2000 or later, January 1st, 2000 or later. So it was so confusing that the first year after death was 01. That, according to that ruling, you would have had to take an RMD that year. But the ruling came out so late, the judge's ruling, that they said, okay, we're going to waive it for 2021. Well, the next year was just as confusing as that one. That was 2022. And they again said, okay, well, we're going to waive it for 2022. Well, they still hadn't figured it out when it came time to go to 2023. So the IRS said, okay, we're going to waive it for 2023. So here they are in year 3 out of 10, and they're still not requiring people to take RMDs. Well, guess what happened in early 2024? They were still undecided about this thing because they're so slow in making regulations for the new year that they announced that they're probably going to waive 2024. And as soon as we come back from the break, I'm going to tell you the rest of this thing, and it is not a pretty sight, in my humble opinion. All right, we've got one more break, one more set of bills to pay. We'll be back right after that. Don't go anywhere. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And the lines are open, 904-222-8255. All right, we were talking about the inherited IRA and the various problems with Secure 1.0 and Secure 2.0 and the things we didn't like. Well, IRS took them till this past week to issue final regulations on it. So this was supposed to be the day that everything got cleared up and things went back to normal, right? Not so fast. Now, something good did happen. They ascertained and announced and finalized there will be no RMDs required for 21, 22, 23, and 24 for people who inherited from someone who died on or after January 2020. That's a good thing. So read a little bit further. Then you get the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. They reaffirmed the stupid 10-year RMD rule for people who inherit from account owners who were at or after the required beginning date. The one thing that Adam and I were wishing, hoping, and expecting, I guess I would say, they would shoot down and say, it's nuts. You got to have it gone in 10 years anyway.
Yeah, why?
Why?
Why do you have to do an RMD?
So let's go back to the trade-off we did. We got the 10-year rule as a replacement for the 5-year rule. And in return, we lost the stretch IRA. So we said, well, okay, you can't take it all over your lifetime. On the other hand, you can leave it in the account for 10 years and then take it, or you can take it anytime you want to voluntarily. That's never a problem. But in 10 years, if you're making a reasonable rate of return, you could see the thing double and then some.
Mm-hmm.
So that's okay. So you're going to wind up with a whole bunch of money instead of a little bit of money over
and
a whole bunch of time.
The government ends up with more tax revenue. It's
yeah,
just 10
exactly.
years from now.
So what did they do? They reaffirmed the RMDs starting for the year 2025. And it's just absurdly crazy. Now, is it overdone? Not necessarily, because there are some proposals back on the board for Secure 2.0. You just never know, do you?
Okay, I'll take that. Just get rid of it. Just make it simple. 10 years. Why different rules if the person who died was 73 versus 70? It makes no sense.
I talk a lot about the people in the profession who have reached the pinnacle of success, and one of them was Michael Kitsis. And Kitsis' guy, Levine, who's like his right-hand man, an accountant superior, says, it's just insanely complicated.
It's so complicated. And tracking it, especially when you have multiple clients with different situations, is insanely complicated. And even for an individual who doesn't have an advisor, what exists for you to be able to track that? It doesn't even,
nothing.
Like when you, if you're 73 and you log into Schwab and you have an IRA, it tells you your RMD. If you have an inherited IRA, it does not tell you what you need to take out.
No. When, what, or why, or
anything nothing.
Else.
So you have no help, no guidance, and they make it as complicated as possible to follow the rules. It is so terrible.
Well, then they did everybody a favor. They reduced the penalty for not taking it from 50% to 25%.
Oh, yay.
And if you ask nicely, you can probably get it for 10%. So first you have to take out the RMD money for whatever year or years you miss. You have to pay full taxes on that, and you have to pay 10% on top of all of that. It is absolutely nuts.
It's insane.
Now, when you come to people like us, we stay on top of it, but we don't do it easily. I am literally constantly studying these rules. They are so complicated. I don't see how the average person on the street is supposed to keep up. So it speaks well for using a qualified advisor, I guess. You shake your head some days. You just cannot understand the stupidity. All right, I've been talking a little bit about the inequities in the tax code over the last couple of weeks. If you remember last week, I believe it was, we were talking about how the inequities happen due to various and sundry things like the marriage penalty, which is a term that I first learned of in the 80s when people started saying that the tax code is full of inequities called the marriage penalty, where married people pay more than the equivalent for the single. Went through a lot of those, and it is now posted as a blog on our website, VanWeFinancial.com. You'll see it. That's part one of the tax inequity project. Today's is a little bit different, and it's kind of a throwback to something I did last November 15th, I believe it was, talking about how things are inflation indexed. When Ronald Reagan was elected and got into office, he was the one that recognized, because probably he was following the Jimmy Carter era where inflation went through the roof, and it was still there when Reagan got in because nobody had done anything to fix it. And even then, Congress was very reluctant to give Reagan what he wanted, so it took a couple of years. But Reagan, through Paul Volcker, actually started bringing the inflation rate down. But along the way, Reagan was seeing among the population what they call bracket creep. The brackets stayed the same, but people made more money due to inflation. So every now and again, when you make a little bit more money, oops, you find yourself in a higher tax bracket. So you could be doing the same job for the same real money, not inflation adjusted, but real money. In other words, you weren't any better off than you used to be, except you move into a higher tax bracket, now you're worse off. So he set about doing the inflation indexing in the tax code, and he won the first round of it. And what the first round did was started indexing the tax brackets themselves for inflation. So you might still have, he had only two rates at the time, 15 and 28. So your 15% bracket would go up to a certain level, and then the next year it would go up to a higher level based on the rate of inflation for that year. That seems only fair. It is fair, but it's not sufficient, because when you make more money, you pay more taxes. So if your cost of living goes up 5% and your tax bracket goes up 5%, does that mean you got 5% more money? No. you got 5% more money minus the tax rate. So you might only have 80% or 75% as much money. That's an inequity that is going to be a lot harder to fix. But meanwhile, my problem with the inflation indexing, or the cost of living, or COLAs, was that the U.S. Labor Department is in charge of developing those numbers. And the Labor Department comes up with the COLA number, and we apply it to, for instance, Social Security increases for the next year. Well, to me, if there is a COLA number, what was the inflation rate for last year, then that should be the number. So it should apply to union contracts. It should apply to Social Security increases. It should apply to tax brackets, and on and on and on. But no, that's not complicated enough for our imperial federal government, who wants one for every occasion. So there's one for tax brackets. There's one for Social Security. There's one for this. There's one for that. Now they want to change the Social Security again, which I mostly object to. And it is so complicated that you know you're less well off every year, mostly because of taxes and because of this discriminatory thing. Now, I'm a fair guy, and when something good happens, I'm willing to say it. And Adam and I both caught this on the exact same day earlier. I think it was either late last year or early this year, when we noticed that the indexing done to the tax brackets was actually pretty generous. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It was way beyond what I thought they would do, because generally speaking, they'll index your Medicare costs higher, they'll index your Social Security lower, and they'll index the tax brackets lower. But they actually did a pretty good job this year. We still have the tax effect that's still hurting people, but there is at least some hope. But my real problem is with the what they call the statutory elements of the tax code. Most of you who are investors know that you can deduct every year $3,000 in gains over and above whatever you have $3,000 of losses, those over and above what you incurred for gains during the year. That $3,000 limit has been in place since at least 1978, if not sooner. That $3,000 is such a putridly small little number this year, it almost shouldn't exist. It would be well over $30,000 if they would index it to today's tax rates and inflation numbers. That's the first thing to me that really has to be fixed, because it results in a de facto tax increase. The other one that really bothers me is from the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, when they limited to state and local taxes, or SALT deductions, to $10,000 per taxpayer. A taxpayer is considered a tax return filer. It could be a single filer, can be a joint filer. To me, if there's two of you on this, you should get $20,000, not $10,000. Also, this was passed back, started in 2018, and it's still $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
If you index that, it would be only fair to the people who live in these high tax states. We got a long ways to go, people, to make fairness out of the tax code, and it's not going to happen with this group. All right, enough for one day, I guess, because Tom's saying we got to go. Thanks for listening. Hope to see you next week, same time. This is the Banwe Financial Hour.
AM 600 WBOB Jacksonville 101.1 FM.